Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adusk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, October 16th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
I'm Melody.
Yeah, I wanted to finish our conversation about high school football. Prior to the program, we were talking about I went to my first high school football game last evening, and that was the first one in 45 years. And it was neat.
Has the ball changed a lot after time, Melody? It's no longer pointy on both ends?
There were some changes, but certainly not to the football or to the kids. It was more, there was just a little more a wrinkle here and a wrinkle there, maybe a gray here and a gray there. But so it was just really exciting and interesting and fun to see those kids certainly enjoy themselves. And it really did bring back memories of, when I was in high school and junior and senior and going to football games. And it was kind of neat. And, the cool air, the fall air and the smells and it was very enjoyable. Yep. Gold had a little bit of a reversal here at the end of the day. We had a high of 1185, struggled all day to keep that lead, and we're down 680. But still a nice run for the week, 1177. It's holding, and that's a very good sign. Silver was down 10 at 1613. Palladium managed to be up 12 points today at 102.1, and palladium was down 10 at 6.99. So it's a mixed bag, and precious metals, platinum and rhodium were both up, where the other three metals were down. USDX today is up 0.21 at 94.66. So we had a nice strong dollar this week. So again, gold holding its own. With this big turnaround in the dollar, as we were ready to break down into the 93 level. So, that's gradually moving up. Crude oil, 0.86 at 47.24. And the stock market managed to be stronger today, up 74 points at 17,215, along with the NASDAQ up 16 at 48.86. S&P up 9 at 2,033. The euro is still holding 114, but it is down 0.21. The 10-year yield holding 2.02%. And just little moves in the Asian and European markets overnight. So it was kind of a quiet day in the markets today. It was really kind of bizarre. U.S. manufacturing production fell for the second straight month in September. Fewer appliances, fewer computers, fewer electronics. The Federal Reserve says factory output declined 0.1%, following the drop of 0.4% in August. And manufacturers also cut back on production of steel and other metals. You can suggest there's discussion, the strong dollar, weak overseas economies, and consumers holding back. You know, pick one. So companies are focused on reducing their stockpiles. So overall industrial production, which includes mining and utilities, that also fell 0.2%, and is also the second straight decline. And mining output plunged 2% as energy companies sharply reduced oil and gas drilling. So we talked about that earlier in the week, about the problems, their loans, and them selling a lot of items in order to pay down their debt. Here's something else interesting I thought today, Al, is UPS. They're raising their fares, their rates, not fares, but their rates. Their air and freight rates by an average of around 5% as they're looking to boost revenue. And the UPS spokesman said some large shipping customers or retail consumers could see larger or smaller increases than the averages, but he declined to give specifics. He said the UPS needed the increases to cover rising labor and equipment costs and to be compensated fairly for its services. They're also going to boost surcharges for fuel and heavy packages. So, you silver buyers, you better hurry up and buy your monster boxes of silver, as they are deemed heavy packages. But it's interesting, too, about the fuel surcharge. You have oil prices dropping. You have gasoline prices, but they're going to boost their surcharges for fuel. So I guess those shareholders and the top people want a little more money in their pocket, as they say they want to be compensated fairly.
We all
want
to be compensated.
Yeah.
And we all believe that we should be compensated more. Whatever we're getting, we're pretty sure we're worth even more than that. That's human nature. But what I'm curious about, does this indicate that UPS, the demand for UPS is growing? And because the demand is growing, they're raising prices? Or does this indicate that the gross revenues are falling, and in order to try to hold, profit margins, whatever, that they are increasing prices in the face of increased demand or diminished demand? Do you have any idea?
Well, they're looking to boost their revenue because that has stagnated. So I would
that indicates that their demand is not increasing.
So they're compensating for higher prices. So, but what's interesting is that the next article we're talking, Christmas is coming, and we have all these online retailers, and they're all working behind the lines to make sure that they can deliver faster. And so they're looking, online sales are expected to increase 12%. So you would also have to assume, if you divide, you've got the three major shippers, FedEx, UPS, and the U.S. Postal Service. So if online sales are increasing by 12%, their businesses are going to be increasing too. And I just think they're raising to raise. You know, things do cost more now, regardless of, lower gasoline prices. You have higher costs. You have the Obamacare that they have to pay for. You have a lot of other areas that they're going to have to that I think is making their expenses higher. But
I think there's another side to it. Maybe that UPS is just saying they were coming into the Christmas season. There's going to be 12% more products shipped by.
They're not going to do it. They're not going to just increase it temporarily.
Well, you never know. I mean, you can watch and see what happens. You can always cut it back. But it's interesting coincidence
they don't
that they're raising it just before we get into the Christmas season.
You know, and
like they're going to take advantage. We've got a captive market here. They want it to get. They want the product to move faster. Let's raise the rates.
Well, they will never lower the rates. It's just kind of like the post office. Once it goes up, it's there. They never, you know, very rarely do they ever. If they lower it in one area, they're going to increase it in another area to compensate for it. It's kind of like laws, legislation. Once it's on the books, it's very rarely ever. Goes away, never mm-hmm. gets repealed or anything. So, but what's interesting is there is a big fight for these retailers for the Christmas season. A lot of them are upgrading their software because they're trying to get their products. They're trying to be the quickest or the cheapest to get their orders shipped. Amazon is cutting the time it takes to process. And what's interesting is Amazon. Let me see if I can find this here. Amazon. This is lengthy. Purchased a Boston-based robotics company in 2012 for $775 million. And I remember when they did that, but the robots pull shelves of goods out of the storage areas and bring them to workers. Now, what's amazing, now get this, Amazon now has more than 30,000 robots in 13 warehouses.
How long before we give them the vote?
We're using software, this is Amazon, they're using software and algorithms to make decisions rather than people, which they think is more efficient and scales better and will be more accurate.
Have you ever seen one of those videos of how the Amazon robots work, or at least I saw one perhaps 6 months or a year ago? And it's pretty interesting. These robots are just maybe 3 foot square and 18 inches high. And they can not only go down the aisles, they can go under the, they can go any place, basically anywhere, because the shelves are raised up off the floor high enough where the robots can go underneath the shelves if they want to. And then they can lift the shelves, they get under the shelf, position themselves, lift it up, and they can pick it up and haul it back to the, wherever somebody needs to look at it to extract whatever parts. When you see it, it's really quite extraordinary, because we're not just talking about one robot walking around, you know. We're talking about scores of these things, and maybe hundreds. I don't know if they've got all 30,000 working at the same time, but maybe they do. But probably not in the same building. But I'm looking at I saw a video of a large warehouse, and you have these robots just buzzing all over. And you look at it, it's like a swarm of bees. It's hard to imagine that they're not bumping into each other and causing collisions and the rest of that sort of thing. But instead, no, they're pretty amazing, really, really just astonishing.
Well, it's really amazing that these retailers and the warehouses that they're building so they can do all this, trying to compete with Amazon. I mean, just huge places, huge, where the world's largest, let me see, they talk a lot about Walmart. They're looking to open up all kinds of processing centers and warehouses. They've opened them up in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, Fort Worth, Indiana, Atlanta, just to fill online orders. The new warehouses, they're going to ship hundreds of thousands of orders daily. 4 to 5 times its dozens of existing smaller warehouses. I mean, they're talking about warehouses the size of 20 football fields.
Yeah, and monsters. Just monsters. Enormous facilities. And there's another implication in all of this. What does all of this imply for the brick-and-mortar stores that are selling products out on the street right now?
Adios, amigos.
Well, it's going to be slim pickings, that's for sure. A lot of them are going to fail as people increasingly move into these, they buy their products over the Internet. I mean, it's going to hurt the brick-and-mortar store. It's going to hurt the mom-and-pop. Right? They're going to find it extremely difficult to compete and stay in business.
And the thing about it, though, too, and I do the same thing. If I buy online, I go to the names I know. I don't look around for – so your little mom-and-pop shop, they can't even compete online.
Yeah.
Because, if you want something, what are you going to do? You're going to tag in Macy's if you want clothes, or Target, or Walmart, or Amazon. You know, so you're not going to, you know, Google and go to the website of mom and pop on Main Street. And even though they could have the same product, they could have the same price, they could be just as competitive. So they can't even compete. But you have Target, they're opening up two new warehouses this year. They launched a program that enables to let shoppers know a precise delivery date. So a lot of it is all coming down to the delivery dates and how quick that they can get these products to the customer. And you know what? It's really kind of sad because, I don't know, it just kind of loses.
Well, the whole thing does not bode well for anyone other than perhaps Amazon and Walmart. They may make better profits and whatever. But insofar as we install 30,000 robots, that's at least 30,000 Americans that don't have jobs.
That's right.
And those 30,000 robots are presumably working 24/7, where if we'd had live men and women doing the same job, we'd have three shifts. We'd have 100,000, 90,000 employees working three shifts instead of 30,000 working 24 hours a day. Where are we? We are creating a remarkably efficient system, delivery system. And that's all great, but when we become more efficient, we necessarily make less money. Who's going to buy the products? If 30,000 robots are going to perhaps put 90,000 people out of work, we're going to have 90,000 less people to buy products from mom and pop or from Amazon. And as we keep competing and improving and becoming more and more efficient, we have less and less jobs. So who's going to have money to buy the products? There is something in this that is it's to some degree self-defeating. It's a little bit like the governments of the world that are having their central banks reduce their interest rates in order to make their products more competitive. Right? There is a competition to see who can make the most efficient, unprofitable products in the world. And as you do that, you have less and less margin for error, and eventually, financially, things are going to begin to blow up. This is certainly a big change. This is evidence of a big change, not necessarily change that's taken place yet, but is in the process of taking place. And, you know, there's going to come a day when we're going to have to sit back and rethink a lot of our positions on welfare. I don't know what you're going to do. I think you're going to have welfare for people. You either have to have massive death, or you have to accept the idea that a lot of us don't have to work. We just sit around, watch TV, and, drink Ripple. But there aren't jobs for us. The number of jobs are going to be diminished by these robots and by the increased efficiency. We don't have jobs. We don't have money. Now what? Are we going to starve to death, or are we going to lurk around in the dark and knock people on the head to steal whatever they've got? Or are we going to have an increasingly liberal society, progressive society, leftist society, where large masses just taken for granted? You don't have a job. Of course not. But you still get enough welfare where you get by. Can we hold the country together on that basis, Melody?
I can't imagine, but
I understand. These are certainly interesting times, and we are facing the kinds of problems that would have disturbed and perplexed Solomon. All right? I don't think he had enough brains to deal with what we've got going on here right now. One of these things where he says, I don't know, you figure it out. I'm going back to my 60 concubines. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Remember, folks, we got 90% silver quarters in for you. We'll set them up. I mean, you can buy any size bag you want, but the special today is $100. Well, I got to rework that number because I was looking at 100 coins instead of 100 face value. But if you want 100 quarters, that special price would be $357. That's $357 for 190% Washington quarters. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter, and of course you can listen to the radio programs archived and listen live on a daily basis. And I do believe we have a caller, Al. We have George, I believe, you're from Canada, George, Toronto.
Hi, Melody. Hi, Al.
Hi, George.
How you doing, George?
I'm doing great, thanks. Listen, Al, could you spend a couple minutes on explaining something to me? Retail banks and investment banks, they have what they call a charter. I'm not sure what that is, but I guess it's a set of rules they have to follow.
And yeah, it's like a corporate charter. That would be my understanding. The charter would be like what the document that was used to create any other corporation. The corporation has a charter. The charter declares the purposes of the corporation. And in some instances, those purposes are fairly narrow, and the corporation can't step outside those purposes. The corporation might be set up to provide medical assistance to people in a particular community or whatever. And if that's what the charter says, they can't. If they see an opportunity to help launch a space, you know, a missile into space, no go. Corporation can't proceed beyond the limits specified in its charter. Most of the corporations, they say, they create broad, generic classes of purposes where they can do just about anything they want to do anytime they want to do it, but it doesn't have to be that way. It is a lot of times with this. That's my understanding. Well, but you have more questions on that?
Are charters, like, government regulated? The point I'm trying to get at is if they're not following their charter by the criminal activity that some of them have been accused of, it cannot not be taken away from them?
I'd say the answer is
put out
of
business?
It depends on how big they are. You know, I mean, there's some of these outfits that really are just criminal enterprises, or they are to such an extent that the government won't mess with them. All right, they're too big to fail, too big to jail. We see that happening. But if they are, if you can get your hands on a copy of their corporate charter and you can read what the limits were for their activity, and you can reach points where you say, okay, they've exceeded, they got five things they can do according to this corporate charter, and here they are doing something that absolutely doesn't fit into these five classifications. Well, whether you've got a grounds for a criminal complaint in this matter is debatable. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But you may have a grounds for civil. You can almost count on it that they have grounds for a civil suit. But would, you know, I don't think you're talking about you're not talking about a small bank down at the corner of the, you know, four blocks from your home. I think you're probably talking about something like Bank of America or J.P. Morgan Chase or whatever is equivalent in Canada. Is that true?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's a
tough. I was just wondering if
that
was another way of pursuing to bring these guys under control a bit.
Well, you know, in the United States, we have something called RICO suits, where you can function as a private attorney general if you can find evidence that an entity has been committing criminal acts for over a year, and they have at least two criminal acts that are separated in time by at least a year. And then you can move in and you can file suit on your own if you care to do so. But difficult to sue these. If you're going to try to sue a bank, you're going to have to assume it won't be the first time they've ever been sued. They know how to deal with this. There are attorneys that are extraordinarily competent. And you're going to have to really know what you're doing to make an allegation against a major bank stick.
And I guess you need lots of money, too, eh? It almost has to be a class action.
Well, that or knowledge, I mean, if you're really adept, in theory, you could handle this on your own. But what they're going to do is send you so much paper, all right, that you may be able to clean up just by bailing all the paper they send you and selling it for wholesale prices. Because there's going to be documents. And in the end, I never wanted any money. I just wanted all the paper. We can sell it off. I made $50,000 just selling the paper they sent me. You know, maybe that's your best hope. But it's a difficult.
Maybe I can heat my house or something with it.
Yeah, maybe.
And the other thing too, Al and Melly, what is with the people of Arizona? Why do they keep voting McCain in, that warmonger? I don't get them.
I don't.
What are they drinking down there?
I don't know. I don't know what McCain's attraction is to the people of Arizona. That's actually a good question. I'd never thought about it before. But
I lived there, so I don't know either. I lived there for many years, but I just think it's his war record. I think it's the, you know, it's, you know, they
well,
think
they,
he's
they,
great. I mean, most people across the country think he's great.
I don't. I think he's nothing.
Well,
but
I mean,
trouble.
people that know better. But I mean the GDP, the generally, I should
doom.
Say the common, dumb.
Generally
dumb. Generally dumb. No, the general populace out there doesn't know any better. So, you know, they listen to mainstream media.
Yeah, that's a good question, George, but I think that's another one we're going to have to submit to Solomon rather than to me, because I don't know. I have no idea why they keep him around.
Hey, why did they vote Obama in office twice?
I understand.
So it's the same.
Mysteries. These are other questions for Solomon.
All righty.
Well, I can tell you one thing about Obama being voted in. You get a lot of the black population, and they just want somebody who's their skin color in there. And that may sound racist, but that is the truth. I know there's people up here in Canada who thought having Obama in was the greatest thing on earth, because I was involved with a black family, so I know how they think.
Yep.
And they just don't see past skin color. They're just as bad as us sometimes. White people,
not
you know?
As bad as us.
No.
You know, I would make the argument, and I have on other programs, the allegation that white people are guilty of racism is hugely exaggerated. From my perspective, black people need racism. Obama didn't help black people. He hurt them. Because fact that he got to be president of the United States is pretty good evidence that the majority of the white folk in this country are not racist. He didn't win that office just because he had 100% or 95% support of the black community. He got into the White House by the votes of a lot of white folk. And that's good evidence that racism, white racism, is not a massive, I don't doubt it exists in places and the rest of that sort of thing, but it's not a massive and overwhelming phenomena. But I think, and this is completely politically incorrect to say so, but from my perspective, blacks need racism. They need racism as an excuse for what is a kind of abject failure for the African-American community. I mean, why don't they prosper? They've had things handed to them for a couple of generations right now. We've had affirmative action. I'm not saying nobody prospers. I'm not saying there aren't any intelligent black people. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying there is a problem in the black community that is so significant that a significant portion, 30-40% of the black population, can't seem to compete effectively. And there's two ways to look at this. One is they are being stopped. They're being prevented from competition by the evil white men that are all racists. Or two, they ain't got game, and they don't have the tools to compete in the society. Now, if you've got a choice between admitting that either you aren't qualified, you're not competent to play this game, or you're going to sit back and say, oh, the real reason we were prevented from playing the game by a bunch of racist white folk, what are you going to do? I think blacks
are... Well, the thing is, they play the racist card so much because it seems to be ingrained in their culture a lot of the time. You know as well as I do, there's a lot of... black dads who just don't stick around to raise their families, you know, and I think it's part of the culture. They like to play on that. And because I know some very intelligent, hardworking black people.
Yeah.
And, but you know, some of their families like that, and some of their families just go back to the same old thing. Well, you know, I'm being held down by whitey.
Yeah, no.
And it's not always true, you know?
No, I know. I think it's generally not true. I think it's an excuse. And I think part of the reason we see this is because the parents, and especially the mothers, I'm only saying that because blacks tend to be raised in single-parent families. They are telling the kids the reason they don't have a new car. When the kids say, Mommy, why don't you have a new Cadillac? Mommy, why can't we get a PlayStation or whatever? Mommy has two choices. She can either say, I'm incompetent, or she can say, I've been suppressed by the evildoer whites. What do you think Mommy wants to tell her kids? She wants to teach them early on that whitey is out to get them. And despite the fact, I mean, we've had Eric Holder as the Attorney General of the United States. We have Barack Obama as President of the United States. I'm not saying there's no racism. I'm not saying anything like that. But I am saying that racism is supported, required, maintained. Last thing black people, I won't say a lot of black people, Last thing they want to do is admit there's no racism, because if there's not, they have to take personal responsibility for the problems in their community. Nobody wants that responsibility, and therefore they say this because Whitey does it. The white man, he'd be holding us down. Bull crap. If you want to be president, you can be president. If you want to be a surgeon, look at Ben Carson. If you got the ability, you have the inclination, you want to do it, it's there. Nobody's holding you back. The question is, you know, this is like me complaining that I'm not playing center for the L.A. Lakers. And why? Because the black man has taken over the NBA and they won't let the white boy play in professional basketball. That's why I'm not center for the L.A. Lakers. No, it's not. The reason is I ain't got game. I loved basketball when I was a kid, but I was never very good at it. Right? That's why I'm not center for the L.A. Lakers. So nobody's discriminating against me. They have correctly assessed me, and they said, this guy can't play ball. I love the game. I like playing it even to this day, but I'm not
very
good
at it. You don't look good in tights, Al.
Nah, at this age, for my age. For my age, all right? I look good in tights compared to kids that are 50 years younger than me. But for my age, right? What do you say?
Oh, okay.
I can still make it in tights.
All right. Melody, you guys have a good weekend. Bye.
All right, George. Thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Melody, did I hear you moaning?
Oh, brother.
Huh?
Oh, brother. You know, I mean, I've been discriminated against, you know, various times throughout my life. And what do? You just pick yourself up and you move on. It makes you supposed to make you a better person. I certainly didn't create any hate in my heart or anything, just an irritation. But, I mean, you know, when you look, you know, it all does come back to what... I mean, there at one point in time, there were jobs for a lot of these people. There were jobs that they could qualify. But when we talk about, you know, Amazon with robots and you have, you know, 100,000 plus jobs, you know, going to mechanical people, you have a government
persons,
who have signed.
Persons. Not people, Melody. These
you have
are
signed.
Persons,
you have
people.
Government who has signed all types of trade agreements to where those jobs went overseas. I mean, what
no,
is
no.
there?
Oh, I
and
understand. I mean, they've
I know
got a legitimate complaint, but the complaint is not racism.
No,
all right? It may be impacting one race more than others. I give you that, but it's not the same as intentional racism. They're just saying, look, we're going to make this efficient, and if people like if people don't have the skills necessary to hold down a job, too bad for them.
Let me finish this, too. These inner cities, you know, there is so much corruption, not only in the government in those cities, but the police department, the people. And there is no way these people in those inner cities will ever get out of there and ahead, because it's not designed for them to be done. So in some respect, a group of them are being used, you know, for profit, for money, and so forth.
That's why we all get used, Melody. I mean, we all get used to some degree. Everybody who has a job is being used. In theory, every one of us is making more money for the boss than the boss is paying us. That's just the way it works. That's the way the world is. It's nothing unusual about it. We all get used. It's not that big a deal.
Well, it is a big deal when you're being used to keep you in drugs to where you can't, you know. No, there it is a bigger deal than what you say. I mean,
no,
all things are equal, I agree with you. But all things are not equal when you're talking about the inner cities and why that structure is designed to keep it that way.
Well, I'll tell you make another comment here before we break for more commercials. When we talk about blacks and whites, are we really talking about a race, two races, or are we talking about two cultures? All right? Are blacks discriminated because of the color of their skin, or are they observed for essentially the content of their character, the quality of their culture? You know, you can't, if white works, white is not a function of skin color, white is a function of values. And to the extent, I would argue that Barack Obama is whiter than a lot of people who are passing for white. That's how he got to be president. He's a white guy, right? Yeah, he's Negro. His race is Negro, at least half Negro. But he got to be president because he's a white guy. White is a culture. If you want what white has to offer, you have to embrace that culture. You don't have to change your skin color, but you need to embrace that culture. They talk about people being oppressed, white, the black people being oppressed and held back. You know who's holding them back? The people in the black community who stand up and say, you guys are acting too white. You guys have got to be black, act black. You got to be remain loyal to the race and the rest of that. Fine. You stay loyal to that particular culture, and you're going to wind up in poverty. If you want to prosper, you're going to have to be white. I don't mean you have to change your skin color. I don't mean you have to lose the ability to dance. But you do have to begin to embrace values, a different system of values that I regard as white, not a race, culture. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. And we've got an article here from Zero Hedge. And the headline is, "The Latest Evidence That Global Trade Has Collapsed. India's Exports and Imports Plunge by 25%. Late last month, India surprised 51 out of 52 economists when the Reserve Bank of India cut interest rates by 50 basis points. That's a half a percent. It's difficult to understand how 51 economists out of 51 out of 52 failed to see that cut, a cut of that magnitude in the cards. Everyone was surprised. But part of the explanation, we see it in an article from Reuters, they say India's exports of goods shrank by nearly a quarter in September from a year ago. They're talking about shrinking by a quarter of a percent. They're talking that exports shrank by 25% from September 2014 to September of 2015. falling for the 10th straight month, that would be September, and threatening Prime Minister Narendra Modi's goal of boosting economic growth through manufacturing. Now that's exports, fell by nearly a quarter. India's imports fell by 25.42% in September from a year earlier. All right? So the imports have also, they fell by a little over 25%. Ballpark figure, India's imports and exports dropped by 25% in a year's time. India's the, my understanding, world's third largest economy. They are not necessarily, most of their economy is domestic. They're not necessarily the biggest importers and exporters, but just the same, this is a dramatic change. The article continues, as it says, of course, the hope will be that the Reserve Bank of India's rate cutting will boost exports and further narrow the deficit. But again, this is just a race to the bottom, with the entire world attempting to out-ease one another in a desperate attempt to stay ahead of the pace at which the global demand is contracting. And he's right. I think that's an excellent explanation. It might not be abundantly immediately clear, but what they're saying is India's cutting its interest rates by 0.5%. And they're doing it with the hope that it will be able to cut the price of exports and thereby stimulate the Indian economy by making it possible to sell exports to foreign countries at cheaper prices. Well, China cut their interest rates recently, and virtually the European Union has cut their interest rates to some degree, and the only country that hasn't cut its interest rates is the United States. But that's in part because we're already so far down. I mean, we were ahead of the curve. We cut ours, six, 7 years ago. Right now, we're down at we can't cut our interest rates anymore unless we go into negative numbers. But this competition to cut interest rates is ultimately self-destructive. It's like cutting your wrist to drain blood out of your body into a jar that you can sell to somebody to get enough food to pay for to have dinner tonight. And then tomorrow you're going to take another quart or pint or whatever. And eventually you reach a point where you run out of blood. You can't give up your life's blood to buy food for dinner, not on a regular basis. And yet that's what they're doing around the world. And they are, as they say here, they're attempting to out-ease. They're trying to get into quantitative easing. Japan's doing it. European Union's doing it. We've done it. All right? China's trying to do it. We're trying to out-ease one another in a desperate attempt to stay ahead of the pace at which global demand is contracting. Demand is contracting. Prices have to fall. If you want to maintain market share, you've got to make it possible for your corporations to sell products at a continually diminishing price. And it can't work out well. You know, you actually have to make enough money where some people make a profit. You have to make enough money where people who have invested their money in stocks and bonds and whatever, they actually get a fair return on their investment. You have to make enough money where you can afford to keep people working. And what we're seeing is just more evidence that we're seeing it from India, more evidence that the global economy is shrinking. There are going to be less jobs, less profits, less money. Somebody's going to go bankrupt before this is done. We can't stand the competition. I'm talking about in a global sense, we can't stand all of this competition. It would probably have been better off. This is one of the dangers, from my perspective, to global free trade. We've got to compete with whoever it is that can work the cheapest in all the world. Because we have global free trade, we are obligated to compete with whoever is willing. If there are people in Bangladesh that are willing to work for 50 cents a day, they are going to set the bar for the rest of the world. And if the rest of the world, people in California, want to compete on the global market, they're going to have to figure a way for American labor to approach the price that they're paying in Bangladesh. This is ruinous. It can't be. It can't work for long. It can work for a while, but it can't work forever. And eventually you're going to have nothing but masses of people. Like we were talking earlier in the program, Amazon's got 30,000 robots. That's very intelligent, very efficient. That'll make more profits. I get that. But at the same time, it probably translates into maybe 90,000 people who don't have jobs. How many people can we throw out of jobs before finally there's nobody left to buy products from Amazon? The robots aren't going to buy any products. How many jobs can we eliminate before it becomes apparent, look, we got to keep these jobs going so people have money to buy our stuff? We're off in a kind of imbalance right now that will not be, you know, it seems logical, it seems necessary, it seems profitable, it seems efficient, and yet in the end, it's going to hurt us badly. People own Amazon, the stockholders, they'll do okay. But the vast majority of the people in this country will not be well served by this growing inefficiency. Where's the inefficiency? Or growing efficiency, not inefficiency. Where does the efficiency come from? It comes out of reduced profits and reduced wages. Huh? We can't become more efficient without reducing our profits. We can't become more efficient without reducing our wages. Can't become more efficient without reducing the cost of borrowing money. You reduce it enough, all of a sudden things start to collapse and fall apart. So, global free trade is not the blessing that a lot of people would have you believe. You know, it's trouble. Comment, Melody?
No.
No.
It's Friday.
Exciting. Uh-huh.
It's been a rough week.
Yeah,
it's been a rough week.
You were inspired by Hillary's example. They asked her a question. Do you want to respond? She said, no. No.
I want to respond. But I do want to.
Got that Hillary effect is taking place all over the country now. Women all over the country, instead of giving you an answer to a question, they're just saying, no.
No, please. I said that way before. Anyway, yeah. We're talking. I also want to touch on about retired truck drivers that, you know, they're could actually see their pension checks cut in half.
Yeah,
I think this is something that we're going to see everywhere. You're going to see more of these funds get cut, and they're looking at 60%.
Yeah, some of them.
That's
60% cut as early as July.
Yeah, it's huge.
All right. Yeah, I know. And it completely, and there's in the story, this is from CNN Money. In this story, they're telling the story of retiree Bill Henderschut stands to lose $2,100 a month if his pension fund gets his way. This is simply more evidence of what can't be paid won't be paid. I've been telling people that for years. And we look at it, and poor Bill Henderschut, he's going to lose 60%, or he may lose 60% as early as July. This is going to be rough. It's quite likely that I'll have to try to find some work. But who's going to hire a 74-year-old man? I mean, this is a difficult situation. And we can all look back at this. And we see Bill Henderschut is the truck driver, the former truck driver. He's getting beat out of his pension.
35 years as a truck driver.
I understand. And we see the pension debt owed to some truckers won't be paid, and we say, well, that's too bad, but why should I care? I'm not a trucker. And then we can look around a little more, and we can see that the debts owed by the city of Detroit to some of its former employees and creditors, they also won't be paid. And we say, well, you know, that's too bad too, but why should I care? I never worked for Detroit. I don't live in Detroit. And we can look at the state of Illinois, which is virtually bankrupt, and say, golly, that's awful, but why should I care? I don't live in Illinois. I don't work for Illinois. I'm not a creditor for Illinois. That's their problem, not mine. And what I'm trying to communicate is the idea that we should care, because we are living in a time where, while each of us, while each of these debt defaults may seem like isolated events, in my opinion, they are actually dots that can be connected to point to a growing reality that threatens us all, and that reality is what can't be paid won't be paid. All right? And the next point is that there is an enormous national and even global debt right now, and it's all but certain that at least 50% of the world's debt will be repudiated at least 50% of the debt, and in my opinion, there's a high probability that at least 80 and probably 90% of the debt will be repudiated. Now, I've argued this for a couple of years. That repudiated debt will include the governmental debt of most nations, including the United States. It'll include most United States bonds, most municipal bonds, most stocks, most pension funds, and most bank accounts, including yours, ladies and gentlemen. Right? When your bank repudiates the debt they owe you, you go down there and say, well, I've got $100,000 in my bank account. The bank says, sorry, Charlie. No, you don't. We've had to bail that. We've had to seize that money for a bail-in to support the bank. And you won't be getting your $100,000 or your $10,000 or your $5,000. You're going to scream and shout and say, you can't do that to me. I'm a depositor. My funds are guaranteed by the FDIC. And then you're going to find out the FDIC has something like a quarter of a cent for every $100 in debt that they are allegedly guaranteeing. They're not going to protect you. You're not protected. At which point, you might learn a lesson. You might remember when you asked, why should I care when the trucker's pension was repudiated? When Detroit went bankrupt and Illinois became insolvent? You might have and should have cared to the extent that those debt repudiations were the first leaves in the breeze that signaled that most of the existing debt was going to be repudiated in the foreseeable future. Seeing those seemingly isolated events as repeated and connecting warnings, you might have cared enough to take whatever wealth you've saved in the medium of paper debt instruments and converted that wealth into real, tangible assets like land, tools, guns, bullets, silver and gold that could not be destroyed or repudiated when the world's paper debt instruments are finally repudiated. The debt is too great to be paid in full. Fundamental principle, for so far as I'm able to see, I don't think we can escape that reality. Some pensions will be paid. Some municipal bonds will be paid. Some U.S. treasuries will be paid. I get that. But I'm still convinced that at least half and probably 80 to 90% will not. They will be repudiated. And if you're storing your wealth in those forms, you're going to lose your assets. So, fundamental theme we advocate, we argue on this program on a regular basis. And it's part of the reason. We can't just look at Bill Hendershoot's problem. Oh, poor Bill. He's losing 60% of his pension. Well, too bad for him. No, too bad for you, too bad for me, too bad for Melody. None of us are going to get out of this without a great deal of aggravation and jeopardy. All right? We can minimize, however, how much trouble we suffer if we can anticipate the problem correctly. And we sit back and say, okay, I got to get out of these paper debt instruments. I got to get out of these digital debt instruments. And because most of them, maybe mine, maybe not, but we don't know. But maybe it's going to collapse, and therefore I need to put my money someplace that's safe. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addis. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. And we will be back next Monday. Have a good weekend. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball. Money, money, money.